I'm ready. Hey, y'all, this is Trina, and it is June. And so, you know, we celebrate all things blackity, black, black, black for June. We celebrate Black Dads for our Black Daddy Day event. And we also celebrate Black Innovation for Juneteenth. So if you are listening, please know that on Juneteenth, we launch our Innovation Lab application. Up to 10 Black parents in the state of California could earn up to $5,000 for a stipend to do an innovative project that is going to offer solutions to us and our community. So please go to our website, look up parentingforliberation.org/innovation to learn more about the Innovation Lab. But before that, you know, Juneteenth comes Father's Day first. And so this year we're hosting our Black Daddy's Day event again. We're calling it Changing the Game of Fatherhood. It's going to be a cool game night with casino games like craps table, you know, good old dominoes game, a good old spades game. Don't be over here shaking the table because, you know, we got to play these games in a liberated way. Okay. We're bringing back my homie DJ, who's actually our podcast guest this month. And he'll be hosting and facilitating the conversation with Black dads about how can we change the game of Black fatherhood? How can we shift our ways of being as Black dads? So please come out to that event. And y'all know we getting some hate on the social media about it because people be hating on Black dads, Black families, right? So we posted our event on Facebook and social media, Instagram, all that. I'm about to give y'all a little tea. We've probably deleted it because we don't be trying to, you know, shed too much light on negativity and the hateration, but I'm in my feelings today, so I'm gonna share a little bit. So we posted our Father's Day event, and then this dude, I don't know his race, but from the pictures it looks like, you know, he looks like, I assumed, you know, he was a Black man, but he's just like, he comes up first, he's the first comment, and I'm all excited like, oh, we got a comment already. And he comes up and he's like, there's only going to be three dads showing up. You really think they're going to show up when they are not even showing up for their children? And I'm like, really, dude? The CDC data shows that Black dads are the most active. They don't got to live in the same house with their kids, but they are more active than any other dad, according to race, according to the data. And active meaning they are present, they are participating in the child raising and the child rearing, and not just discipline. Data shows that they are more likely to change diapers, to feed, to nurse, to bathe, to dress, to help, like to read a story, those kind of things. Just being present, being a dad, connecting with our children. I know I was raised by a Black dad who did all that. I remember my dad tried to comb my hair. He would feed us. He would do all the things, right? And even my son's father, like we're not together, but as a co-parent, he shows up in the best way that he can. And when my child was little, he was the one who was a stay-at-home dad while I went to work, right? And some people would say, oh, he was a deadbeat, he was a loser. And I'm like, no, we made a choice as a household that because I was earning more because of systemic racism and white supremacy, right? I was a breadwinner. I was earning more, that it would make more sense for him to stay home with the child instead of putting our child into childcare. And like basically his full income from his job would cover the cost of childcare. Because if you know, childcare is, back in my day, it was only like $600-$700 a month. I don't even know. It's probably thousands of dollars a month now because my kid is 14. But anyways, back to homie on Facebook. I'm just so frustrated that people believe that Black dads are not active, right? And that narrative continues on. So that's why we have to continue to remind people, show images, continue to say Black dads are active, Black dads matter, and Black dads are present, even if they're not there. And if they're not there, let's try to dig into what is the cause of that. So the Facebook thread just kept going. And I appreciated this other Black father who jumped in the comments and said, well, if it's only going to be three, then count me as one of those Black dads. Because Black fathers love our kids. The ones who don't are not the focal point. We need to organize more events like this. Shout out to Parenting for Liberation to help Black fathers and help them to learn how to co-parent, even if there's dysfunction. And that's what this event is about. So I appreciate this dude who responded, who said, count me in, because I am one of those dads. And I know that there are more Black dads out there who are showing up for their kids. And I just want to salute those Black dads today, because the focus is always on the ones who are not present. And we need to focus on the ones who do show up, who are present, who are trying their best, and who want to shift the ways that they have been parented and shift the way that they are parenting their children. And we're so lucky and honored that this conversation for this podcast is with one of those types of dads. We are joined this episode with DJ Johnson, and he is a father, author, mentor, coach, counselor, and a sports stats guy, and a three-time bodybuilder. He grew up in the foster care system, and yet despite that, he's gone on to lead a very successful life. He spends a lot of time talking about his childhood, and like helping others who've had similar experiences, who suffered from child abuse and domestic violence and emotional trauma. And at one point he even wanted to end his life, but he realized that he was here for a purpose. And although his road wasn't easy, DJ is here despite everything. He now works as a counselor, providing counseling services and workshops for youth and parents. And he's actually going to start providing workshops or monthly meetups for Black dads under Parent and Filibration. So I'm so excited to have him on the podcast. If you are in the LA area, please join us and show up for our Black Daddy Day event. It's happening on Saturday, June 17th at the Canvas in Los Angeles. It's going to be a great time, good conversation, beautiful community, delicious food, and it's going to be a vibe, because you know, when we come together, it's always a vibe. Raising Black children in the United States can be really scary. And as a Black mother, I realized I was parenting from fear. And I wanted to make a commitment to parent for liberation. You are listening to Parenting for Liberation podcast. And I am your host, Trina Green Brown. Each month, I'm joined by other Black parents and we discuss our own journeys to push past our fears so that we can raise our beautiful Black children to be whole, free, and liberated. Wake up, everybody. No more. Hey, y'all. This is Trina Green, and this is the Parenting for Liberation podcast. On this episode, we speak to my good friend, DJ Johnson. He's a husband, father, author, mentor, coach. He's also a sports statistician. How do you say that word?
Statistician.
Can we restart? Statistician. Yeah. Statistician. That's a weird word.
It is weird.
I'm just going to say sports brainiac or something. I'm like a sports nerd. He runs the numbers.
You can call you a stats guy.
A sports stats guy? Yeah. I'm just going to call you a sports nerd, and then I think they'll, no, I'm joking.
That works.
Just so they know you're not like a dumb jock, you know?
Yep.
All right. Are you guys ready to restart? Because I made a blurb. Okay. All right. Hey, y'all, this is Trina Green, and this is Parenting for Liberation podcast. And on this episode, we're here with my good friend, DJ Johnson. He's a husband, father, author, mentor, coach, counselor. He's a sports stat guy. And on top of that, he is a three-time champion bodybuilder. Welcome to the podcast. The champ is here.
Oh, my gosh. I can't with you right now. Yes. I mean, yes, I guess it's true that I am a three-time bodybuilding champion, but that doesn't have anything to do with what we talked about today.
Yes, it does, because listen, we're going to be talking about redefining fatherhood, talking about masculinity, and sometimes people equate like champs with like defeating their opponents, but that's not all we can think about when we think about like being the champion in terms of a father. You see how I put that, mix that up?
Okay. All right. That works.
I'm going to always figure out a way to blend it in. But no, thanks for signing up and agreeing to do the podcast after, you know, collaborating with Parenting for Liberation for a couple of years now on our Black Daddy Day event, which is coming up. So I'm glad that we can talk about what we're going to be talking about on this upcoming weekend for Father's Day.
Yeah. And we are way overdue. I think you reached out to me originally several years ago to be on the podcast, so finally excited to finally be on.
I think that probably was the first reason why I hit you up, and then it became so much more, because you know, an email from Trina to do one thing will evolve into multiple things, because I'm all about like connecting and weaving and building with people. So I'm so glad, yeah, that you're finally on the podcast, but also excited that you know you'll be working with us more consistently to support Black dads. So let's get into this conversation about Black fatherhood. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. So we all know, we've talked about this on the podcast before, about the CDC data that shows that Black dads are the most active fathers, regardless if they live in the house or not with their children, more active than dads of other racial backgrounds. And so that CDC data, I think, came out in like 2014. So it's been a long time. It's almost 10 years, right? But when you think about Black fathers and when you hear about Black fathers, the narrative is always, you know, absentee, not there, not present, not active. Why do you feel that these narratives like continue to exist even when, you know, I've seen more, you know, we've seen the data, but we've also seen like more images of Black dads like being more present? Why do you think the negative perception still keeps going?
I just think that the powers that be wants to see, like, the thing that I think about, I won't even go that deep. I'll just say the thing that I think about often, my pastor talks about, like, if you want to like impact a family, you got to tie up the man first. So if you want to come in the home and rob the home, you got to make sure that the man is subdued to be able to take the home. And so using that analogy, I think about like, if we want to impact Black families, or the powers that be wants to impact Black families in a negative way, we have to put out these negative views and ideologies about the Black man who's supposed to be leader of the home, and make it seem like they're not doing their job ultimately. And then we put all this undue pressure on Black moms about them, you know, doing everything on their own and being single Black moms and all these different things. I just think it's a narrative that is meant to rip apart and keep Black families from thriving ultimately.
Yeah, you know, I'm not all the way with the whole heteronormative binary, right? But I do understand the metaphor that your pastor is promoting. Because, you know, there's like, you know, a variety of different types of families that could exist. But I do think that there is an intentionality around trying to dismantle the family infrastructure, and trying to separate us and divide us and conquer us, regardless of like the family formation. I definitely think that's true. And I think there's also just a way that, as you said, like you gave the examples of both the ways that both Black mothers and Black dads have been denigrated by society. Like, it's like they attack both of us, because to then go around and blame single Black mothers, right, for all the problems that are happening in the Black community, it's a way to just like not take responsibility for systems, right? It's easy to be like, it's those people over there that got their stuff messed up. It's not that there's a whole system working to intentionally keep Black men incarcerated, keep Black women at the lower pay, right? That there's intentional systems that are operating to criminalize us, criminalize our children, criminalize our parenting, right? So I hear you, the powers that be, the powers that don't need to be, right?
Right. And the most scary part about the system is that the system is doing its job so well that so many of us Black and brown sisters and brothers are succumbing to these narratives ourselves. Like, we are upholding these traditions and different things that's just keeping a cycle of all these different things happening without us kind of seeing a good thing inside. But obviously with the data, like, that's changing, and we're starting to see a difference in that. But it's just interesting that they work so hard to put these systems in place for so many years, and it works so well that even the people in the system start to uphold the system, which is it's always a scary thing.
Yeah, like, we internalize it. Like, we internalize the belief, you know, we internalize white supremacy and racism. We also internalize patriarchy and heteronormativity. So, like, for example, you know, like, the idea and historically the concept of, like, the role of the father, even with the narrative, you know, the example the pastor one, right, about, like, the protection, right? The idea is that the primary role of a father is to, one, be the breadwinner, to bring home the bacon, and the woman's supposed to cook it. You know, like, just that very heteronormative, patriarchal idea that the father's supposed to be the provider and the disciplinarian. Like, wait till I call your dad. You better sit down or I'm going to call your dad. Like, that was the threat, right? Do you feel like fatherhood is still limited to that? Or do you feel like it shifted to something else?
I am jaded because of the people that I surround myself with, whether it's my friends that I connect with, who all pretty much happen to be fathers, in the way we view, in the way that we interact in our households, and the way that we support our mothers or the significant others. From my view, I feel like there is a shift. But I also see on the other side of it, I have to call them out because I'm always irritated every time they post something. But Dear Fathers is a big platform on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And they are always posting videos related to this exact idea of how we are the disciplinarians. And when we come home, it's on. And they're talking about, you know, belts and all these different things. And I just be like, bro, like, your platform is way too big to be continuing to uphold these outdated norms, one. And two, like, y'all post so much more better content that could be so much more impactful, but yet we still succumb to these ideas of who we are as Black fathers. So, and it's crazy, you get in the comments and you're like, oh, people are about to complain. And I'm grateful that there's a shift, right? I would say about 30, 40% of the comments are like, yo, this is whack. And there's still about 60% of the people who are like, yeah, like, we need to go back to that. I think I saw a post recently from Deion Sanders who was talking about upholding the traditional ways of being spanked and all these different things. And I'm just like, bro, like, first of all, can y'all let it go, right? Can y'all just let it go and know, like, hey, y'all had that. Whatever you decide in your mind works for you in that moment. But right now, the science, the data, the numbers, everything's telling us that we need to be different and we need to operate differently with our kids. And so on one end, I see a change and I see some people kind of, you know, being a light in this space. But on the other end, I still see so many people stuck in these old ways of being and thinking.
So let's shed some light on the folks, not necessarily specifically who are doing it, but what does the shift look like? Like, you know, we know the traditional dad comes home, he's in charge, he brings home the bacon, he's the disciplinarian. Yeah. When he shows up, everybody's quiet and perfect and acting and well behaved. But supposedly, right, when he's not there, it's just everyone's running amok until he gets there. So that's the old trope. You said that there's like a 30 to 40% shift. And you said you're one of the folks who've made a shift. So what does the role, right? What is the shift in redefining fatherhood? What does that entail now?
I look at it as like a triple double effect. It's
here we go with sports stuff. Triple double.
How can I be the best version of myself? How can I be the best dad I could be? And how can I be the best significant other, spouse, co-parent, whatever, right? I am more than a provider. It's a message that I've told myself. It's an affirmation that I've told myself a lot, especially when my son was first born, because I did fall in line with that when he was first born. And I actually had a aha moment. I tell this story all the time. My wife, I think my son had to have been one or somewhere near it, maybe just born. And I think I was working, like, you know, I have so many different jobs. I think I was working in a nonprofit and then I was doing stat stuff at night. And so I was working a lot during the week. And I remember coming home and just feeling proud, like, oh yeah, you know, I'm making sure my family's taken care of. I'm making sure everything's good. And my wife just kind of was sitting there and she was like, you know, if this is what our relationship is going to be like, then I could just do this by myself because I'm pretty much a single mom already. Because, you know, even though you're providing, and I appreciate that, but like, I need more. I need more from you. Like, I just can't have just this part. And it really challenged me. You know, I might have been in my feelings in the moment initially, but it really made me think, like, you're right. Like, I am more than just this. And I want to be more to my son, especially as a kid who didn't have his dad in his life. I didn't know who my real dad was until I was 11. And so being as... For me, because my dad wasn't in my life, I was very, when I first got into fatherhood, I was really dead set on, like, I gotta be present. I gotta be there. Like, I gotta provide. I gotta, you know, be there. And I just didn't know what that meant because my dad was absent. I just knew I'm here. Mm. And I thought I fulfilled that role. And then my wife reminded me of, like, no, you gotta be more than here. you got to help change diapers. You got to help, like, be a part of this process. I'm not the only parent in this situation. And I was like, okay. And so from that point on, it was just challenging myself in ways of, okay, how can I be actually present? How can I involve myself in all the different ways that my son needs me to be involved? And so that was for me where the shift started to happen, where I'm like, yeah, I am more than these things. And I started looking at, okay, how can I be like a better version of myself? How can I be the best dad I could be? What does my son need? What does my wife need from me? And how can I operate in that as best I can to truly be who my family needs? Because I think so many of us dads, if I could just be real, like so many of us dads go into this and we're trying to do fatherhood based off of how society wants us to do it, based off of how our parents did it before us, based off of all these different things, and none of us really cater to what our family truly needs from us. And so for me, I just challenged myself to, like, you know, be open to what my wife was telling me and really trying to adhere to that message and just really become who she needed me to become as a dad, but more importantly, as a partner in this thing.
I love that. I love that so much. And I feel like what you're sharing is that you shifted in terms of presence and time and attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you became one of the dads that I'm assuming the CDC was talking about when they said, like, is more present and active in the child's rearing, right? Like, not just live in the house. So it sounds like at first you was a dad who lived in the house and
basically
made sure that the bills were paid and you went and went, you got the money and you was hustling and working multiple jobs so that you can make sure there's a roof over your head. Right. But it didn't sound like you were that present in terms of, like, and not just like the change in diapers, but like reading a bedtime story, tucking them in, giving them a bath, sitting with them, playing with them. Right. That presence. That's what CDC is acknowledging, that Black dads do that more than other dads. They help them with homework. They cook them a meal. They feed them, they change them, they clothe them, they bathe them, they do story time. You know, they do hands-on activities and hands-on engagement with their children. And that's so important and so vital for children to see that, right? So also what we were talking about is, like, there's a shift right now in terms of what you were talking about with the Instagram page you're referring to, is that there's a shift in discipline, right? Because there's also this narrative that dads are the ones who come through with the belts and with the popping or the whooping and the spanking. And so how did you shift in regards to that as well?
Yeah, I knew pretty early on, maybe even before my son was born, that I think where I initially started was I wasn't going to hit unless it ultimately called for it. As a kid who grew up with that, I knew I didn't want that for my son, but I also didn't know what the other alternative was. So that, I think that was more of that part more than anything. And then as my son was born, and even before he was born, like I worked with students. I've been working with students since about 2009. And so really starting to understand kids and how they operate and child development and going to school and all these different things, like it really kind of reinforced this idea of, like, I really don't want to hit my son for like, I don't believe that there's any reason to. And so that I went into fatherhood kind of having that as my, I don't know, moral compass. Mm-hmm. And then as he was born, like I started to kind of confirm that even more of, like, yo, I don't want to hit this kid. Now, I had moments where it was like close, or I was so angry or frustrated, like I never hit my child, thankfully. But also when you grow up in that, like I'm also battling against what I've known and what I grew up knowing. Like, this is how we handle these situations. This is how we, you know, handle these tensions. And for me and my parenting has been a constant, not more so in the beginning of my parenthood, of fatherhood, of being able to, like, combat what I grew up knowing about what it meant to raise a child and really be with this new wave, at least new to me, of listening to him and allowing him to have a voice and to speak up against different things. And we have moments even now, he's six now. And so I'll have moments where I'll get a little frustrated with him and he'll, you know, get frustrated back. And it really kind of snaps. Now it snaps me back to, like, okay, chill out, DJ. Like, there's a way that we can handle this and have a conversation about this without it getting to those levels. And the thing that I've so blessed to at least be able to like have confirmation that we're on the right track with raising him. Like, I'm sure we have our ultimate fears and all the different fears that have been instilled in us for not parenting in the way that we grew up being parented. One of his teacher gave us the end of the year report, and one of her comments was like, just talking about like how loving and how kind and how creative and free he is, either in his work or how he interacts with other students in his class. And so for me, like constantly getting those small reminders of being on the right track with raising my son in this way without using violence, without, you know, yes, there's discipline, but the way that I teach it when I work with parents is like, look, there's a difference between discipline and punishment. And people who call for, oh, the kids these days don't have any discipline. No, what you're really saying is kids these days don't have any punishment. Because punishment is you want them to suffer for something that they already did. Discipline, in my mind, is to teach so we can change your future behavior. And so what better way to teach than to model as parents? And a lot of us, we want to discipline and we want to do certain things with our kid. We want our kid to be a certain way, but we're not modeling what that looks like for them. So
oh
for
my
me,
goodness,
like,
so true.
Parenting, like for me now, like I just look at parenting as like constantly, like I said, trying to be a better version of myself. Cause I know that my son is watching me more than he's listening to me.
Yes.
Like he's seeing my actions more than I'm like, yo, do this. And then he sees me do a completely different thing. With the working out thing, you mentioned that I'm a 3-time bodybuilding champ.
Yes,
you know?
He out here flexing on us with the muscles and stuff.
But like, you know, he would watch me like get up early for workouts and do certain things. And like, and so I don't know what that means for him now in this moment, but I can imagine that it's imprinted in his brain enough where when he's playing sports and he's in tune with different things or even in school, whatever it is that he's doing in life, he knows like, okay, dad is, he goes after certain things or he has discipline in this. My hope is that he's able to see that in my actions as opposed to me constantly like, hey, do this, do this, do this. It's like, well, you know what? Let me just show you. So I think for me, like, I'm still learning. I'm still growing in this. And I think the best thing about this journey is that I've just been so open to like learning and taking a course if needed or getting connected with yourself and other people that are in the field of this parenting greatness is what I like to call it. But like, yeah, I just knowing that, you know, hitting and different things just wasn't on my docket and being able to challenge myself in that way. This for me is hard parenting.
This is hard. It's the hardest. People think that that this is the easy, lenient, permissive. Like, nah, this mess is hard, y'all.
Right.
It takes courage. It takes bravery. Yes. It takes self-reflection and awareness. It takes time. It takes patience with yourself and with your child. I feel like parenting in this way teaches us so much about ourselves, and then we can teach it to our children, like you said, by modeling. It was interesting because the other day, right, my kid plays sports, and he was disappointed in how he performed, right? Mm-hmm. So he was hard on himself. And a male in his family was trying to encourage him and saying like, no, you didn't do that bad. And, you know, you got to give yourself, you did good actually this. And as he was saying it, you know, my son was still in his mode of like, nah, man, like I should have did better. Like I didn't do that right. And, you know, he was like beating himself up. And it was what was interesting happening was as I was witnessing this, the male got frustrated that he was still beating himself up, right? So then he got upset. And he was like, well, if you don't want to hear me out, I'm trying to tell you that you didn't do that bad. And then my son got upset. And so, like, I said, how are you trying to affirm him? But then you get frustrated. And then you start yelling. I said, yelling at him to believe in himself is kind of not going to work. It doesn't work that way. And then I was like, you're doing exactly what he's doing. I was like, he's frustrated, so he's talking negative, and now you're frustrated, now you're talking negative. I was like, I was like, you have to You have to shift the way that you engage and actually see and be empathetic. Like, you know, I hear that you feel like you did a bad job. And I hear you. You're frustrated with yourself. But, you know, I believe in you. You did good. It's just a game. You know, it's just a game. You'll play better the next time. Don't beat yourself up too much. You know, like, I was like, encourage.
Yeah.
He started getting frustrated. It was the most confusing thing I was watching. And then instead of me trying to tell my son, because, right, like, some people would say, like, I let my son, like, get an attitude with an adult, right? Because he was like, no, you're not hearing me. Like, I didn't do, you know, because now they're like, you're not hearing me. And he's like, no, you're not hearing me. And I'm just like, oh my God. So I try to tell the adult in the situation, like, it's okay. Like, I'm like, you're not, I was trying to tell him, like, by yelling it at him, he's not going to be able to hear it. I said, he can't hear it right now. He can't hear it right now. And I guess people probably thought that I should have been telling my kid, like, don't just listen, right? And so when, you know, we step, you know, everybody went to their respective vehicles, and then in the car I was like, you did not receive him, you need to send him a message and apologize. I think, what do you think? Because low-key he was trying to support you, but you was so in your feelings that you didn't hear him. I said, did you feel like he was saying something wrong? He was like, he just wasn't hearing me. And I was like, but you also weren't hearing him. So then he did just send a message and was like, sorry, I didn't hear you. And then they just kind of was like, it's okay, you know. And so they're fine. But in that moment I was like, whoa, I was trying to, who do I talk to? And so there's a way that I was like, it makes me look like, right, that I'm just jumping in and saving my son and like telling this male adult who was trying to give support that he was in the wrong. But I'm just like, I'm trying to come to you adult to adult that this child is not at the place to hear this right now. He just walked off the field. And if he's in this mood, there's nothing you could do that's going to change his mood, especially if you start yelling at him. Like, it's not going to work.
Just hold space for
his feelings, you know? So like you said, like, it's hard. It's hard to even be aware of yourself. Because I was telling him, I was like, I don't think you're aware that you're yelling. And he's like, I'm not yelling. I'm not even mad. I want him to know that he did okay. And I was like, yeah, but you're like frustrated that he's not hearing it. So like, it started to elevate. So anywho, I just wanted to share that story because I'm like, even when we're trying our best, right? Because that male had no bad intentions and wasn't trying to, like, he wasn't angry. He really wasn't angry. He was just frustrated that he couldn't get through to him. And I was like, and sometimes you're angry that you can't get through to him. That's you. That's your work to do. And that's what I realized as a parent who's trying to do this work. Like, even when I'm frustrated with my kid about something, I realize that my frustration is my work to manage. Like, I need to figure out, why is this irritating me? Why am I frustrated? Yep. What could I do differently? What is this trigger? But I still got to come back to him and be like, hey, so this is what's really going on. I'm really nervous for you. I don't want you to feel negative about yourself. The negative self-talk freaks me out a little bit. Like, you know, so... So it's some work.
Oh, yeah. Life-changing. I just think about, like, all of us who are doing this work, who are really committing to doing it differently than how we were raised. Like, I just think about the positive, independent-thinking kids that we're raising. And I literally was just having this conversation with my friend yesterday, just about this idea that most of us adults that are walking this earth right now have a hard time with boundaries because our boundaries were constantly, ruined or stepped over when we were kids. Whether we had a feeling or emotion, we were forced to not have that feeling or emotion if it didn't fit the need for our parent. Whether we had a boundary of, like, please don't come into my room, but a parent might take the door off, or they might say, it's my house, I'm gonna go wherever I please. Like, our boundaries were constantly, you know, stepped on. And so as adults, we have a hard time with boundaries, whether it's people setting boundaries against us or it's us being able to effectively set boundaries for ourselves. And so I think about all these kids who are growing up, even my son. Like, I laugh because I've seen the evolution of his grandpa, who's an old school, like, he whipped my wife when she was younger. Like, he's old school as they come. But, like, I've seen his evolution from when my son was first born to now. Like, my son the other day was like, I think he was like, I don't like when, you know, my b-ball come, because he has shirts that he keeps in his room. So he's like, I don't like when he comes into my room, and, you know, shirt without asking or knocking or whatever it might be. But he, you know, he did it in a respectful way. He was just expressing this boundary that he wanted to, and we were like, hey, you know, that's we can understand that. So we had the conversation with dad, I call him, and that was it. But I'm like, I can imagine, like, wow, like that wasn't something that I was gonna be doing when right. I was younger, right?
Exactly.
Expressing a boundary in that way. And so I just keep thinking about, like, how far ahead our kids are gonna be, because I feel like so many of us got to 18 and it was just like, okay, but what now? Because our parents didn't necessarily prepare us for certain things, as far as whether it's boundaries, whether it's conversations, whether it's like, you know, as soon as we turned 18, it was like, get out of my house type of thing. And it was just like, now I just feel like our kids are just going to be so much more prepared, you know, to navigate this world, hopefully, that will cater to them, but we'll see what happens. But at least they'll be confident and independent, and that's ultimately what we want from them.
Yeah, I mean, you're so spot on, because I didn't even think about now as an adult why I struggle with, like, being able to say no to things. Like, it's so true. Yeah, like, I don't know how to set boundaries that often. Like, someone literally just told me today, like, you know it's okay to say no. And I was like, I'm learning how to do that. I still am learning how to do that. And I think you're right. Like, our kids have an advantage of being able to, like, learn how to have a boundary, set a boundary, requests, like, say their needs, you know, like, things that I'm, like, in therapy right now as a grown-ass woman.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know how to say what I need. Like, I need X and Y and Z. Like, that, to me, even saying my needs and knowing what they are is setting a boundary, right? Or setting a requirement, right, of how I want to be treated, how I want, you know, to be responded to and respected. And I feel like our kids do have that advantage. And even the example you gave about your son and his papa or his grandpa, you know, my son has those situations where he can tell me, but I want him to, I like, what I'm like trying to cultivate is, like, you know, you have to learn how to be able to say that to other people as well. Like, and like, he, it might be in his own way and it might take him some time, but he gets around to saying it, you know? And like, I help him to see, like, things that I notice about me that I still, like, even though I'm trying to raise him to be liberated and to speak his mind and to, like, be true to himself, I can still see how we said, like, they model what we do, right?
Yeah.
So one thing I noticed that he does, and then I realized, oh, I do that too, because, again, I'm struggling with boundary setting. I won't say struggling. I am still growing my skill set of boundary setting. So something I noticed that he does when people ask him a question, if he really doesn't want to do it, he doesn't say yes. He says, sure. And I know sure means sure. If you want me to do it, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. So, like, hey, do you want to go? You want to go to the movies? I know he don't like the movies. So he'll be like, if he don't really want to do it and he trusts the person, he feels like it won't be a conflict, he'll be like, no, not really. But, like, if he don't want to hurt someone's feelings or something like that, he'll say, sure, we can do that. But he doesn't really, right? And so I had to call the person and be like, hey, next time you ask him for something or ask him if you want to do something, I said, make sure you get a strong yes, because he won't tell you no because he doesn't want to hurt your feelings. And I was like, and I'm going to work with him on the back end. So I worked with him on the back end. I was like, you really don't want to do that this weekend. And he's like, no, not really. And I was like, so just say that. He's like, well, I don't want to hurt her feelings. She's planned this thing. I was like, she would probably much rather not do it if she knows you don't want to do it. I was like, she thinks she's doing it for you, but you don't really want to do it. So you should just say you don't want to do it. And it was something like, do you want to go to Dave and Buster's? It was like, you want to go to Dave and Buster's? Like, they were, like, trying to take him as his graduation gift. And he was like, sure. But it's like, she don't want to go to Dave and Buster's either. She's doing it for you. So I'm like, you could just say no. And so I realized in the professional world that when people offer me things or, like, send me a, you know, here's a proposal or a scope of work or anything, like a doc, if it's not close to what I thought it was, I'll be like, I guess, sure. Yeah. You know, like, I won't just be like, hey, this isn't meeting my needs. I'm learning how to do that. So practice what we preach is what I need to do, because he's learning it by watching me say things like sure and I guess when I don't actually really, when I really want to be like, no, thank you. And he's learning how to say no to people, and people are a little, like, surprised, and they're like, I was throwing him a graduation party And he just finally told me, he's like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to have a party. But then I was like, well, everybody's already coming. And da, 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 da. Like, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, how do I let all these people down? And I realized, like, it's his choice. He don't have to have a graduation party if he doesn't want a graduation party. So we canceled it at the last minute. I was like, hey, everybody, pool party's canceled. And guess what? It was one of the best decisions, because I realized I didn't want to throw another party. I got a whole event coming up. But anyways, I guess I just want to, like, you know, we're in conversation. I appreciate you sharing stories, too, because it's really helpful to kind of help people, including myself, learn, like, we're on the right path. And we're not going to be perfect, but I think our kids are going to have a little bit more skill set at articulating their needs, their desires, and being able to set boundaries for themselves. And I feel like if that's the biggest gift that I can give my kid, I'll give it to him.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In total agreement.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the things that you were talking about in terms of your relationship with your son, right? It sounds like... you're present, you know, you're making different choices around your discipline, but you still are disciplining. It's just not in the very violent and aggressive way. There's this common belief, right, that fathers are not nurturers or are not, you know, emotionally present or connected with their children, right? Like, that's mom's job. Like, if he's, you know, if a kid is crying, like, mom's supposed to come take care of the kid, right? Like, that's not a dad thing. But studies are starting to show that fathers can be just as emotionally and even hormonally connected to their children as mothers. How do you feel like those beliefs around emotion and nurturing has impacted Black families and Black dads?
I just think so many of us, Black dads in particular, grew up as young boys who were told to stuff their feelings and keep them to ourselves and be tough and be a man. I think that was the overarching message that I remember as a kid. And so as you grow up and you understand, like, one, why did the adults in our life make us believe that feelings and emotions were so bad? That was the first question I would ask myself. And then the other question I kind of asked was, like, if emotions and feelings are so bad, then why do we have them? And so then in my work as a counselor and working with students over the years, there's a question I always ask them, like, hey, can somebody make you mad? And they're like, yeah, like, they name all these different ways of people, you know, upsetting them or pissing them off. And I was like, I like how y'all can think, you know, that is the case. But ultimately, like, nobody can make you mad. Like, what I tend to believe is, like, for those who have a quick, easy yes to that answer of somebody making you mad, what I believe is that there is no space in between something happening to you and your reaction to that thing happening to you. And I think what happens is, as you get older or you get more mature, whatever the case is, you start to learn and understand yourself and how you respond to things. You create more space. And it, obviously, we're on a podcast, so nobody's seeing what I'm doing. But I'm separating my two hands that were together, and I'm creating space in between. And so when something happens, there's all this space in between for me to think about it, process it, deep breath, whatever it might be, before I actually react or respond to this thing. And so many of us, I think, grew up, whether it was labeled as angry or frustrated or whatever it might be, really having an unhealthy relationship with our emotions. And I think so many of us as fathers, I really believe it was my son that really tapped into me being more in tune with my emotions and just more in tune with him. Like, do I still struggle at times when he's crying about certain things? And I'm like, all right, buddy, like, what are we doing here, right? Yes. But I also, like, really more times than not, try to empathize and really hold space for him crying. Like, I'm not like, yo, what you crying for? Like, no, I'm like, all right. Like, yesterday, perfect example. We were at his favorite place is McDonald's, and we were waiting for them to bring the food out or whatever, and he saw that I had a $100 bill in my bag. He's like, oh, Dad, can I have the $100? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, he doesn't want the $100 because he wants to buy something. He wants to play with it. He probably will lose it. Like, that's what I'm thinking when I'm like, no, because I'm thinking about the money that he already has that he just plays around with and just, you know, whatever he does with it. So I'm like, no. I, like, was just staring, like, no, you're not about to get this $100, buddy. And please stop asking, because like this is not even up for debate. And so, you know, he kept going back and forth and he kept asking me, and all of a sudden he's crying. And I'm like, I could have easily been like, yo, you really crying over $100 bill? I probably thought it in my head. But in a space of being a father who's allowing him to have these different emotions and feelings, to kind of go through that process and even go through what it means to, you know, process what just happened and being able to overcome whatever tough emotion he was having in that time. Like, I was just like kind of holding space for him and allowing him to cry about the fact that I wasn't about to give him this $100 bill. And so being able to grow and evolve from a kid who just wasn't really that in tune with my emotions. I was a stepper growing up and then ultimately blew up on people and fought a lot in my middle school and high school years, to being now a person who's able to not only hold space for my son, but the hundreds, if not thousands of students that I get to work with. That's kind of how my evolution has come in terms of being able to be more in tune. And just what I've just learned is that not just kids, but like all of us really want space held for us. We want to be heard, we want to be seen, we want to know that people understand us in some form or fashion. And I think for me, I've just been able to like, all right, what are you really, you know, trying to tell me in this moment? And how can I hold space for you to be able to have that without shutting you down? And because in my mind, like giving my son $100 bill in that moment just don't make no sense. And it's dumb, and it's a dumb reason to cry, ultimately. But like, I'm also not about to shut down these emotions and feelings that he's having in the moment. And the thing I was thinking about recently is like, we used to have some hard tantrums in stores. And I think about like now with him being six, he doesn't have tantrums as much. And I really believe it's because we were able to weather the storms when he was younger to hold space for those feelings and those emotions, and teaching him how to, you know, take deep breaths and do things differently and do things more effectively. We now have a more calm, more gentler kid for the most part. And so for me, I just been able to see the evolution of what it meant for me to be more in tune with my feelings and emotions. I started therapy shortly after my son was born, because I just knew that there was something. I had experienced all these different things in my life as far as success is concerned, and I still felt like something was missing. I still felt like I wasn't operating on all cylinders. And so when my son was born, it was kind of shedding a light on certain things that I still needed to heal. And so I got into therapy and really started to have those conversations. And yeah, I'm still a work in progress. I'm still not perfect, but each day just trying to be a better version of myself. And so that's, for me, how I've been able to be more in tune with, you know, being that emotional dad that my son needs. And I just really don't subscribe to what it means to be tough, at least based off of society's view, as a man. Like, for me, I'm reshifting and changing that perspective every day that I'm a father, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, that's what this is all about, right? Redefining fatherhood starts with redefining masculinity, really, right? Yeah. What you're talking about is, in a patriarchal society, that the idea of what it means to be a man goes back to those things that we talked about earlier, being a breadwinner, not having emotion, right? Being logical, but not emotional, right? Being a provider. And so, like, not having the space or the capacity to like process or hold space for emotions or talk about feelings, right? Our emotional intelligence, that is all new. That is definitely a redefinition of what it means to be a man and also what it means to be a father. And so I really appreciate you speaking to that, because it's so important, right? Like,
it really is.
Children need to know that we care. And honestly, I feel like that is a redefinition for parenting, period, because I think growing up for me, similar, right? I was not allowed to have feelings. I remember being told that I cried too much. I was a crybaby. I really think I was a young little empath and I was just feeling all the feels. And I remember being told that I had too many feelings and like basically wanted to like take my feelings out my chest. So my mama told me. My mama's like, I want to rip your feelings out your chest. I was like, oh my gosh. Because at that time we were playing Mortal Kombat and you could rip somebody's heart out, remember?
Yeah.
In that video game. So I was like, remember. Oh my gosh, she wanna rip my heart out and finish her. She wants to finish me. That's what I thought. I was like, damn, this lady's so mad that I keep crying that she want to kill me literally, physically. No, mentally, emotionally. But I started, you know, now, you know, in my evolution and growth, I'm like, oh, okay. They were too afraid. I guess it wasn't safe for them to be in their feelings or to have emotions. But like it creates so much toxicity, you know, when I think about a lack of emotions and like not being able to like express your needs, like it creates some of these problems that we see, like whether it be like anxiety, depression, quick to anger, like wanting to like fight somebody over any small thing, like just having a short fuse because there's so much feeling bottled up that they have never been able to let out. And the only way that people allow Black men to express feelings is through anger, rage, and violence, right? And like look where that has left our community, our society, with the numbers and the statistics around mass incarceration. It's like intentional, right? This cycle is intentional. And so I think we are we're trying to break like huge cycles just through our parenting. But I really believe that parenting in these ways could really shift the next generation of all of our children, boys, girls. We haven't even got to daughters, right? I know you don't have a daughter, but we could talk a little bit about the role of the Black dad and a daughter, right? People say that girls fall in love with their father, or like father, people who remind them of their father. They say that, you know, research shows that daughters who have stronger relationships with their fathers have like more confidence. They tend to do better in school. They tend to have better economic outcomes. You know, it's a correlation, right? Now we can't like say it's causation, but I think there's a correlation. Do you want to speak a little bit to the father-daughter bond? And how do you feel like the parenting style that we're trying to implement now would actually shift the father-daughter bond as well?
Yeah, I think so much about, you know, my wife and her dad and the relationship that they have, which isn't like the best relationship, but they're pretty close and connected. And that's something I picked up on right away. And I noticed even in how, you know, he was with her and that connection that he had with her, like she came into the relationship with a standard of how I should treat her. And so it's opening the door for her, and it's you know, she taught me how, like, if we're walking on the sidewalk, like I gotta be on the outside. Little things that, you know, tradition, and you're like, why does that matter in the first place? But in reality, like, for me, the thing that I was looking at is like, no, she has standards. Like, she has a way of how I should treat her, and I need to uphold that as much as possible if I'm gonna win her heart, if I'm gonna win her over. And so I think about, like, with dads who have those strong bonds with their daughters, like, you're not gonna get some any old you know, person that's gonna come into their lives and try to be in relationship with them and just treat them some old way, especially when that standard is being set in the home. And then I just think about all of the students that I work with, and a lot of them tend to be female students, and one of the questions that I always ask them when I initially meet with them is like, what's your relationship like with each parent? And I'm always curious at what it's like with the dad. And a lot of times there's not much there. There's not, you know, some might say it's good, some might say it's, you know, so-so or whatever it might be. And you can see something there, right? Emptiness, whatever it might be, when that relationship isn't as well or isn't as good with their dad. It's impactful. And so just based off of my experience, obviously with my wife now and just the relationship that she has with her dad, like that relationship was so great. I was like, hey, like I recognize how much you love this guy. Like, I was open to letting her, or I mean, that sounds so weird to me now, but like I was the one pushing for her to hyphen her name, when we got married, like, cause I was just like, I want you to be able to, you know, let his legacy live on, because I just admire that relationship that y'all have and have built. And so, yeah, I just think about, and from that perspective, just looking at it from my wife and her dad, and then, of course, all of the female students I've had the opportunity to work with, and just knowing what they're struggling with and dealing with, whether it's depression, sadness, or just accepting themselves for who they are. And a lot of the correlation in that is like they don't have that great a relationship with their dad in the home. So that's kind of the perspective that I have.
Yeah. And I know statistically, you know, Black children have the experience of like having a parent who's incarcerated or like impacted mm-hmm. by mass incarceration, right? I know that that often is. When I used to do work in schools and I would talk to, you know, the students about their parents and stuff like that, I remember I learned the hard way early on. I was a youth coordinator for a program. I was fairly young and it was Father's Day coming up. And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, for our check-in, like, what are you doing for Father's Day? And mm-hmm. it became a deep counseling session. I had to call the like school counselor who happened to like support the program that I was running because I didn't just not thinking through the check-in question to realize mm-hmm. that might not necessarily be the like most happy thing for folks. And like, maybe they weren't celebrating right. Father's Day because there was a lack of relationship or fathers who weren't present because of, you know, other systemic issues like mass incarceration or gang violence and things of that nature. And so it was a deep conversation about that, yeah. about the impact of not having their dads and about like who are the other male figures in their lives. And so I just like now I'm a little bit more cognizant of that. Mm-hmm. And my father was also incarcerated at times and was, you know, away sometimes, but I was able to still maintain a relationship and a bond so I could resonate. Mm-hmm. But I just think about like, yeah, what is the role of what is the role of a Black dad when those systems have impacted our communities yep. in serious ways, right? And so I yep. think about the impact of mass incarceration or, you know, systemic violence or racism that's embedded mm-hmm. in our systems and how they impact Black families. So we talked about that earlier. Yeah. And I remember you were saying like, oh, you know, you fought really hard to like go to work and like you thought being a dad was the provider thing. And I was thinking mm-hmm. as you were saying it, because when my son was born, I was the provider. I was the breadwinner, right? Because I mm-hmm. had a higher income, so we had to make a choice in our household, like what made the most sense. Like I had been working somewhere and had a more stable income, and his dad was like still in school at the time, and mm-hmm. so it was like, well, you should not necessarily go to work because we don't want our kid to be in like a daycare at like in the months. Like we were like, no, we have a choice. Mm-hmm. Like we're gonna choose to have one of us stay home, and it made more sense financially for me to go to work. And so you know, it was a complete role reversal. And so I think about the impact, even in my family growing up as a child, my dad being someone who was formerly incarcerated, he was not going to get this high paying job where he could be the breadwinner. Yeah. It wasn't going to be possible. Yeah. And my mom was going to college when I was a kid. She mm-hmm. graduated with her bachelor's degree the same year I graduated with my at junior high. Right. And so mm-hmm. my mom ended up being the breadwinner. And so what did that mean? Like, if he's not the breadwinner, then he's not the father, then he's not a man, mm-hmm. you know? And so I was thinking about that as you're talking. I was like, some of these old stereotypes and norms and the patriarchal, like, roles that we believe in terms of gender roles, especially in the Black community, have been flipped and reversed because of the impacts of things like systemic oppression and the impacts of, like, Black women earn more college degrees than Black mm-hmm. men. I believe that was the data. I feel like Black women, I don't know if we earn more, right, income wise, but you know, from my experience growing up, like Black women have always worked, right, and have often mm-hmm. been like financial contributors to the household. I don't know many Black women who have been like stay-at-home moms and who haven't worked. I know a couple, I know a handful. And so I just think about like those patriarchal ideals of masculinity and fatherhood yeah. don't necessarily fit the Black community anyways because yeah. of the impacts of white supremacy and racism. So because mm-hmm. that doesn't fit us, we've always had to do something a little different anyway. So like, it's also important for us to start doing stuff different when it comes to our parenting. Like we can't continue yeah. to follow societal expectations that were in a society that was not meant for us to survive or thrive. Like this right. ain't for us. That's not for us. So, I just wanted to, cause I was just thinking about that. Like, oh, how does any of this work when the man's not the breadwinner anyways, right? Or he's not the right. provider in that way. And it's not to emasculate Black men. I think that we have to stop equating masculinity with finances.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was just so random. You got reflections about that? Because that wasn't even a question. That was a little soapbox moment. I had like some epiphany in the middle of the conversation.
I know. Like, I think about, like, I think so many of just conversations that I've seen on social media recently about Black men just coming into an enlightenment of, you know, them, like, what they bring to the table not being what their worth is. Because I think so often we've equated that to our worth of, like, what we can bring to the table, what we can provide, and being able to kind of have a shift and, like, no, my value is, you know, different, or creating it for what fits for them. And so I think when you think about breadwinner, all these different conversations, I think technically my wife is the breadwinner right now, but, like, that's not a conversation that we're having. Like, we're having a conversation of what works for our family right now in this moment.
Right.
And it works for me to have flexibility and run my business on the side while she's working, you know, full time as a therapist. And, like, that's what's working for our family. And if we need to have a shift again, and that's going to be the shift.
And y'all have a conversation about it as a family.
Exactly. And I think what really changed our marriage is that we just got into a space where we're like, all right, I feel like we've been trying to be married based off of what everybody else or how everybody else wants us to be married. And it's like, what works for us? Traditionally, I think people are like, oh, you married, you shouldn't be going out and hanging out with your single friends or hanging out whatever traditional people complain about. And I'm like, yo, if you want to hang out, hang out. I'm a homebody. So, like, that helps me because I get to chill and be at home. And when you want to hang out together, we'll hang out, you know, and go out on dates or whatever it might be. But it's like, what works for our marriage, our relationship? And the moment that we really just started to tap into that and ask ourselves that question on a consistent basis, our marriage has been, like, top notch and less arguments, less fights. Cause we just, like, yo, like, let's just create this for what we want, what works for us. And it's just been such a beautiful thing.
I love that. That's how it's supposed to be. That's beautiful. Communication, yeah. Healthy communication,
exactly.
Healthy relationships.
Exactly.
You know, I was thinking about when you said, like, worth, like, Black men coming into some enlightenment around, like, their worth is not only what financially they bring to the table. I think about, like, for children, one of the most important things is, I don't even think it's just for children, for humans, period. I think one of the most important things is connection.
Yeah,
it's about that human connection, that relationship. And I think that that's something that you can't buy. You know, I used to say that all the time to my son's father, too. Right. Like, he's like, oh, I'm going to try to get this better job, make more money, then I could do more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all he really needs is your time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, so if you work less and earn less, but you could spend more time with him. I was like, time with him could be free. I'm like, you don't always have to go to Magic Mountain or Disneyland or, you know, somewhere. Like, go to the park. It's free. Just spend time, right? And I think that we forget that our most valuable resource is our time, which is why you go to work and make money and they pay you per the hour, because they know your time is the most valuable thing. And I think that it's about how we spend our time with the people that we care about, right? Are we using our most valuable resource that we cannot replenish? That's the one thing we can't replenish, is our time. Once it's ran out, it's ran out. So I feel like that's so important. I'm glad I've been saying this. I'm like, it's a renaissance in parenting. I'm like, there is a Black parenting renaissance happening right now. But I also feel like Black men, I think all of us, I feel like I'm just so proud to be of this generation. I'm slash a millennial slash whatever is right after them, because, like, my birthday is right at the end. But I'm kind of so proud. I know people rag on them all the time, but I'm proud that we are having the hard conversations around how we were raised, how things used to be, what the traditions are, where they work, where they didn't work, and how can we shift so that the next generation could have access to a little bit more joy, a little bit more happiness, a little bit more peace, a little bit more self-love and self-care and boundaries, right? And so I'm proud to be alive at this time. I've said that a couple of times more recently. I'm like, this is actually a good moment to be, like, parents and Black children.
No doubt.
Before we head out, since I said, like, it's a time for, like, more Black joy and all that stuff, I'm curious, one, what are some joys of being a Black dad, of being a Black father, that you will want to share, just to, like, you know, close in a positive way. And then I also want you to share with folks, like, how they can get connected with you and the work that you do to actually support Black dads.
Yeah, so for me, it just has to be, like, you know, witnessing the different moments that our, you know, children are going through or dealing with, or, you know, triumphs, whatever it might be, the good, the bad, all of it. For me, being able to, one of the joys is being able to kind of hold that space, as tough as it is in the moment, but realizing on the back end, like, when we're able to hold space for my son to have his different emotions or feelings that he's having, and for him now to be able to vocally express to us different things that he's feeling or different things that's there for him, it's been such a powerful thing to watch, especially as, you know, me and my wife, you know, at times struggle with being able to express ourselves in that way. Like, I remember taking him to soccer practice, and he, you know, we've had a lot of different emotions when it comes to just his anxiety, and just, you know, we always struggle at the first practice because he got to get used to it and take some time for him to get warmed up. But so we were going to practice and he was hesitant, and I had already gone through this process already. So I knew, like, okay, we got to hold space for this. Let's not get mad. Let's not get irritated or impatient. And so he wouldn't go in at first. And so we were kind of going back and forth. And I was like, all right, well, you know, we'll take some time if needed. I know it looks unfamiliar for you. It's you know, a new session of the practice. And so another parent comes up to me and he's like, oh, you know, our kids practice on the other court, not this one. And so then I was like, oh, kind of had a relief. And then me and my son were walking to the other court. He's like, see, Dad, that's why I didn't want to go in. You see, in the moment, didn't know how to verbalize, like, this doesn't look familiar, but I also, you know, feel uncomfortable. And, you know, being able to kind of hold that space to allow him to at least, you know, feel like, hey, this is different. And I don't want to go in here because this is not what it is. And so for us to finally go into the right place, like, we just have so many different moments of him being able to speak up. Or I remember one time I got frustrated with him. He was like, if you're going to keep yelling at me, I'm going to yell at you back. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. I shouldn't be yelling at you. I should be talking to you in a different voice, tone, and way. And so just having so many different conversations with my son that I feel like, you know, the old school way would be like, why you let him have an opinion? Why you let him have a thought? Why you let him have this?
Like, what? You let him yell at you? He threatened to yell at you? That's so disrespectful. Right. And I'm all like, what? The issue is around people saying everything is disrespectful for Black kids.
Right.
It's because people want to disrespect Black kids and they say nothing. Yes. It's like you want them to respect you while you're disrespecting them. And it's like, just don't disrespect them either. Because then we teach them that it's okay to be disrespected.
Exactly. And I'm so glad you said that, because one of the things that I always remind parents of is, like, we set the tone in our home for how everybody else is going to be with our kid outside of it. So in the home, if we're disrespected, if we're yelling, if we're hitting, whatever it is that we're doing, we set precedents for when our kids go outside of the home to maybe get into an abusive relationship, to maybe accept abuse from the adults in their lives. Maybe a teacher is being disrespectful, but you set the precedents and tone in the house that no matter what is happening, you can't disrespect back or can't speak up or whatever it might be. And so all those things I think about often. So for me, joy has been holding space for my son and his emotions outside of all the other different amazing things that he's been able to do. But that's been the ultimate joy for me.
So in your fatherhood, I'm just going to say joy for you sounds like you being able to hold space. So, like, it sounds like you have a little bit of this don't sound bad, but like a little, you're proud of yourself for having the ability to hold space. Because it takes work.
I just know how important it is.
It takes work.
I know how important it is.
It takes work. And like, that means that you have the patience. That means you have the bandwidth. Mm-hmm. That means you have the clarity. That means you have the self-awareness, right? And also it means that you're emotionally attuned to your child. Cause like you pause, like when he was uncomfortable, you're like, okay, we're just gonna stand here with this discomfort.
Yep.
And I'd be like, come on, go, suck it up. What you doing? Let's go. What you scared of? Come on.
Exactly.
That it's okay to be gentle with our kids because they deserve it. Like, shoot, yeah. When I think about being Black in the society, I'm like, nobody actually realizes how tough that is for a little person. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we've dealt with it, so we get it. But yeah. Well, yeah. I appreciate you chatting with us. Like, this will be not the end of any conversations with DJ, because DJ will hosting regular conversations with Black dads at Parenting for Liberation. We're going to be starting the Black Dad Meetup after this event that we're having for Black Daddy's Day. Tell us a little bit about some of the work that you've been doing with Black parents and Black dads, and what can folks look forward to in our Black Dad Meetups?
Yeah, I honestly, like, I'm so grateful to be connected with you, because a lot of the work that I do with parents have been like, we either, you know, Hispanic parents mostly, with a sprinkle of certain Black parents in there. And so the Black dads that I have the opportunity to work with, I've always enjoyed having those opportunities. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, so many of us in our community don't feel the need to reach out or seek help, especially when it comes to parenting. It's kind of like that I could do all bad all by myself type of mentality. Mm. And so the moments that I get to really, you know, uplift and feed into guys, I think I pride myself on, you know, certain friends that I have that don't necessarily follow me for my parenting advice, but they'll hit me up and share a parenting win with me, or send a post to me and like, what do you think about this? Like, I think it's kind of, you know, sketch. Like, I think, you know, one of my friends shared the Deion Sanders post that went up recently. So I just like, for me, it's like being able to live out loud as a Black dad, because I think the more I'm able to show and express and visually show people what it looks like, at least on this end of how I'm, you know, doing parenting and how I'm choosing to be a father in this space, in this society, the more it opens up, you know, other dads to be curious and be open to doing things differently with their kids, or at least letting them know, like, hey, I'm a safe space that if you have a question or you need some help with anything or whatever it might be, like, I could just be that, be that example, be that model for them. So that's for me right now, how I'm ultimately supporting Black dads. But, you know, I've coached a couple of dads, one in particular out in Louisiana. I got an opportunity to coach him last summer. Actually, I was thinking about him today. I'm going to text him. But just, you know, helping dads, just, you're not alone. I think we've been led to believe, either in our society, but in our, you know, Black community, that we got to do this by ourselves. And the reality is, no, I think our ancestors were strong because of the community that was there and present. And I think people think, oh, community is just my family. It's like, no, it's a community of people that you trust. It's going to help you all get to, you know, whatever ultimate goal you have for your family, your unit. So for me, that's trying to support Black dads. And with these Black dad meetups, it's having, you know, hard conversations. It's doing check-ins. It's letting dads know that they're not alone. It's, you know, holding space for dads that, you know, have certain views, and maybe we can kind of shift those views and help them really be in tune. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, we want dads and all parents, really, but dads in particular, we want you to prioritize connection, because that's the one thing in my work with students that has been missing sorely. And that is this connection piece. It's like, so many parents feel like, I'm their parent, I don't need to be their friend. And it's like, yeah, with you being so gung-ho on not being friends with your kids, you're choosing to not even have a connection with them by being so like, oh, I can't be friends, so anything that looks like it, I can't be that. It's like, no, connect. Because what's going to happen is your kid is not going to be your kid anymore. And they're going to be an adult, and they're going to be 24, 25 down the road, whatever it might be. And they're going to have this conversation with their significant other or their friend or whoever they're living with at the time. And they're going to have a conversation about where they're going for the holidays. And because of this connection that you haven't, you know, created with them, they're going to be like, you know what? I'm going to hang out with y'all family during the holidays, because I don't want to deal with my family on the holidays. Like, this really... The conversation, is that how you want that conversation to go, based off the connection that you've been prioritized right now? So for me, that's out of all the work that I do, it's really trying to get parents, more specifically dads, to understand how important connection is and how to get them to that space where they're connecting better with their kids. And that's going to be the origin of all of our conversations moving forward in the dad meetups.
Yes, I'm excited about that. Connection before correction. That's what I've been hearing lately.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah, it's all about the human connection. Well, I'm so glad that I connected with you virtually about 3 years ago and that we finally connected and got you on the podcast. And I'll be seeing you soon at the Black Daddy's Day event.
Yay, I'm going to give you a big old hug.
Yes, can't wait to see you. Thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. And I'm looking forward to continue to build relationships with you and you connecting with more dads so that they can connect to Parenting for Liberation and get their liberation on.
Yes.
All right. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, same. Thank you so much. Stringer.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Parenting for Liberation. I hope something on this episode will inspire you on your parenting journey. Please like us on all social media at Parenting for Liberation. Until next time, let's get free, y'all.